Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast which aims to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as the automotive and social media worlds. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass. Alongside me, as always, Mr. Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Should I wave at all of them?
Just wave at every camera you see, Tony. And joining us, our first guest of season three, Mr. Jonathan Benson.
Hello.
I only knew you as Benson for an incredibly long amount of time.
But did you think that was my first or last name?
I didn't really know. I just sort of went with it. Yeah, you were just Benson. But anyway, welcome. We're going to get into who you are, why you're here in a little bit. But first off, I just want to remind everyone that's watching on YouTube, to subscribe. This is the big thing we're pushing. We have a new goal, 50,000 subscribers, and Tony will give away a car for free.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's an old Polo at work, no. 200 quid. I'll give that one away.
I was really hoping.
So it runs on three cylinders.
Okay, sure. Well, hey, look, it's a car. But no, in all seriousness, we really want to set ourselves this goal of 50,000 subscribers. I don't know what time limit we want for that, but a short one. And the giveaway, the general prize is that once we hit 50K, one subscriber will come and join us here on the podcast.
That's exactly
for an episode.
What I was going to say. That is literally what I was going to say. Should we get a subscriber on?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Great minds think alike, Tony.
Yeah,
it's not
brilliant.
Like we talked about this beforehand.
No.
So anyway, yes, if you're in Europe, we will get you here. If you're not in Europe, don't worry, we can actually dial you in with my new Behind the Glass podcast setup. I can call people. It's quite a worrying
off the desk.
Yeah,
amazing.
Have you put the chimes in?
No. So if you missed out last episode, I did update Tony on the fact that my new mixing desk, you can why are you laughing about my mixing desk?
And we nearly got covered in water.
So
Very expensive
mixing desk. You can program certain buttons to do sort of chimes and celebrations and things like that, but I haven't had time to set it up, so I apologize.
What have you been doing all week then?
I have been very busy, and we're going to get onto that in a second.
Oh, is this the first episode with it?
No. We've had it every episode of season three, but I just haven't programmed the doom, boom, 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 boom.
Not put that in.
Coming soon. So if you're watching us on YouTube, hit subscribe, turn on notifications. If you're listening to us, please make sure to keep following us or subscribing to listen to us on whatever platform you are. And I think that's probably all the housekeeping that I need to get out of the way for now. Tony, you relaxed. You've been drinking water. You've been feeling radiators. You're always a bit frantic at the start of these episodes.
Well, it's a little bit hot in here, mate. I mean, last week I come in here, I was freezing. I bumped into a brass monkey crying its eyes out outside. And now I'm boiling like I'm in the Bahamas.
Well, I'm trying to keep you happy. Well, you complain one thing.
That's why I'm fidgety.
Okay.
Because, like, I just don't know what climate is.
No, but just try and relax because, you know, it's supposed to be like it's supposed to ease into the episode. And all people hear is rustling and banging and like this. And it's like, it's not a nice environment for the beginning of the show.
Well, get it at the right temperature then. It's your fault, mate. You're the presenter.
Okay, fine.
I mean, this is not presenting, by the way.
Hey. Let's not be mean at 3 minutes in. Right, Benson, sorry, welcome. This is the hideousness that is Behind the Glass. We're not used to having company, so we forget sometimes. But anyway, I want to kick things off with a catch-up of what everyone's been up to, and let's start with our guest, Jonathan. What have you been doing this week?
Oh, this week's been, I was going to say largely uneventful, but I've actually been to Sweden.
Sweden.
Michelin XI Snow, which is a Nordic, sort of North America, Canada, Northern Europe winter tyre. So what we call a studless winter tyre. So designed for way more extreme winters than we get in the UK. But doesn't have studs in, so it doesn't damage the road. So it was a launch event for that in Sweden, which was great. It was a Michelin event, so we always get a really interesting Michelin star dinner with this was the first guy to have a Michelin star without using any electronics in his kitchen. So he cooks entirely with fire, so everything was very smoky. But good tire. And apart from that, I've just been planning some tire tests because it's tire testing season now. So I've got a busy schedule next 10 weeks. I think I'm away every week on things, bits and pieces, tire related. So it'll be good fun, but it's just lots of planning.
I probably should have preluded that story with the fact that you are a tire tester.
Yes, I am the, yeah. the
That's
only.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. I probably missed that quite important information. Yeah.
Put it who in the description Jonathan or something. Yes.
Yeah. Who is Jonathan Benson? Just launched into what have you been doing? And I was like, why is this guy with Michelin and son of tires?
He's just a bloke we dragged from the street. Yeah.
Interesting guy, though. So yeah, we are going to get into that. So you are officially, by profession, a tire tester these days.
I prefer to say test driver because it sounds a lot cooler, right?
No, he's an expert. He's a tire expert.
Let's not say that either.
No, you are.
You are. You're a tire expert.
Test driver that specializes in tires.
No, tire expert that drives cars.
Okay, fine. Close enough.
Stunt driver occasionally.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Tony, what have you been up to, mate?
I've been at work, boys and girls.
Classic. Sold any cars this week?
Yes.
Actually, I know you have because I called you this week.
And I was happy.
You were happy. And I said, what's been going on? And you said, oh, we've sold a few bits. And I went, oh, that makes a change. And then you had a bit of a go at me. And you went, no, we always sell stuff. It's just sometimes we sell more than other weeks.
Well, that's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
What have you sold?
I feel cars, like mate.
What
types? Don't put them under
cars
pressure.
Cars with totters on. Yeah. Okay. Some Pirelli, some Michelin. Okay. No, all sorts. So what we sold this week? We sold 7 or 8 cars. I know that for a fact. We sold Audis, Mercedes, a couple of Range Rovers, 2 Porsches.
Oh, hello.
Macan and a 911.
Nice.
A Cayenne and a 911.
Okay, nice. So you've done bits. There's a range of things coming and going. Yeah. What's the nicest thing you've got in at the moment? What's the thing you would kind of like to see go out the door?
Oh, wait. I took a deposit on my Performante as well.
Shut up.
No, I did, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
hello.
It's not gone yet, so maybe edit that bit out.
Hold our breath.
But I've taken a deposit on it.
Little backstory, though. For those that, as you kindly reminded us, don't know who you are.
Everyone knows who I am now, mate. Don't you worry about that.
2 weeks ago, you're like, oh, some of your audience might know me. Now, few behind the glass episodes under his belt, and he's back to being Cocky McCocky.
They know me now.
Your Performante, though, explain. How long have you had it? What spec is it?
I've had it just over 2 years.
Okay.
Bought it new. It's Verdehydro green with gold wheels, gold stitching, black inside. Bish, bash, bosh.
Loved it. And you're deciding to sell it because...
Yeah. Because I just don't need it anymore.
Time to move on.
Yeah, 8,000 miles, 2 years.
Have you driven a Performante, Benson?
I have not. Hurricane Evo and one of the other ones.
Yeah, some
previous Evo.
Lots of numbers
after it.
The Gust Kahala edition.
I thought the Evo was very, very good.
Okay.
Yeah, the Evo.
You've not driven Perfect.
No. So that's the one car that I think I would quite like to experience because everyone does say it's amazing.
How tall are you, Benson?
6'4", 6'3".
Yeah, that's the problem with you two. I mean, you cannot get in it.
No.
That's the problem. And I'm fine.
Has it got the four-wheel steer that Evo has?
No. Only 2 years, two-wheel steer.
And is it? Does it feel like a sort of pista or a speciale, or does it just feel like a more powerful Hurricane?
No, it drives... It's a more powerful Hurricane. It's a lot more precise. Drives a little bit like a... Speciale, but the steering is not as precise.
Okay.
So it's not as darty and as immediate. But it is a very good car. I won't buy another Lamborghini, by the way. But I'm going. No. It's not because of that car.
Mic drop.
No, it's not because of that car. It's just because of I wanted a Lamborghini. That's the one I wanted, and that was it. I'm not a big Evo fan.
You can't do better, I don't think, than that in the car. Maybe the Evo, if Benson's saying it's good, doesn't appeal to me that much, but.
The Evo Performante will be very good, I would think, because it'll probably be a four-wheel steer car. So,
I wonder what they'll call it. Because I hope they give it a different name. It'd be annoying if it was Performante Take 2. It should be...
Evo Performante?
Yeah, no, but even that's a letdown, because they're quite good with their names, aren't they? Super Leggera and Teccirone di Cina Napocotuca.
Or Pirelli.
Bolognese.
Correct.
The Pirelli edition.
Yeah.
Fair. Tyres. Appropriate. Well done, Tony.
clever, aren't I?
You're on form today.
I am, yeah.
Someone's had their coffee.
Yeah.
Well, look, from my side, a couple of things to update everyone on. I went to something called the GP Ice Race with Bentley.
Oh, I saw that.
That looked really cool.
Well, weird event. I think the idea of it, the concept of it, fantastic. Essentially, a beautiful ski resort, and it's like ice racing. They brought it back. It was an event that happened like back in the 50s. The main theme of it is something called skioring. Any guesses at what skioring is?
Not a clue.
Skiing while drawing?
No.
Good guess, though?
No.
Okay.
No.
I tried.
Skioring is... Well, it started with horses pulling skiers behind them and then evolved into skiers being pulled behind cars.
Oh, so it's death.
It's death. This was a thing. This is like a big sport. It was an Olympic, winter Olympic sport back in the 20s or something.
Did anyone die?
I assume about a million people died. I think it was more dangerous.
Week.
Oh, no, not last week.
Oh.
Not that I know of. Anyway. So they've now, Porsche have brought it back. This is the second year. And there's this sort of skioring, which is a genuinely competitive element. And then there's also show runs. And I mean, at one point there was a Formula E car dragging a skier around. I'm not even joking. On the snow. It's weird. Like, what?
When's the video out?
Well, it's been out.
I've been off my phone.
Yeah, don't ruin the time, space, whatever. I don't know. Yes, it was fun. A lack of snow, a lack of ice.
It's a problem for testing, is not to turn things to about tires, because that's what I do in conversations.
Hello.
But it's a genuine issue. We're starting testing later and later each season because we're just getting less and less snow. And the event I was at the start of this week, they almost called it off because of lack of snow. And luckily they had a dump, but the event's meant to be running for 3 weeks. A dump. Sorry, phrasing.
I'm a child.
A dump of snow.
In the toilet? Or?
Yeah.
I just said luckily we had a dump. I was gone. Sorry, mate. Let's all grow up for 2 seconds. What were you saying?
But yeah, global warming's a thing, and it's affecting the industry, so problems.
I mean, just go further north.
Well, further north than a lot of places is ocean, because we hit water.
Okay, fine.
No,
we can't get a boat. I mean,
geography was never a strong suit.
No. But where were you?
So this was North Sweden, but we test in North Finland as well, in Ivalo and Sound Selka.
Where's Antarctica from? I mean,
inside the Arctic Circle. Once you get above that, it's Norway, then there's water, and then it's inaccessible, essentially.
For non-YouTube viewers, Tony's now looking sheepish, because he obviously...
No, not sheepish, I just don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that too. But yeah, it is, it's a thing. I mean, you know, unfortunately, lack of snow, as I found on Snow Tour and at the ice race, and as you found with your testing. But, you know... Anyway, let's not get into that.
How was the Bentley? It was a modified Continental GT.
Absolutely awesome.
I listened to last week's podcast, and I completely agree with you about the Continental GT. I didn't think I would. So we did a test. I do some driving with car throttle, and we did a test with the McLaren GT, and can it be a supercar and a Grand Tourer? So we had the Bentley Continental GT and the Honda NSX, and we did a day driving up in the Lake District, and then overnight. Next morning, all sets of keys were on the table, so I just instinctively went for the set of keys I wanted to drive, and I picked up the Bentley keys, and I'm like,
yes.
How has that just happened? Like, that's not what I thought I would be going for, but that's the set of keys I picked up, and I was like, this car is absolutely exceptional.
Well, you don't have to tell me.
Yeah.
I am just going to do something. I'm going to try and move your microphone.
Sorry.
No.
Stop looking at
if
you.
If you look back, let's try that. Because you sound a bit far away in my headphones. Maybe you're not, but talk to me.
Hello, how is that?
Oh, that's lovely. There we go. You're back in the room. That's much better. So Tony doesn't agree with us on this.
Why?
No. I just don't get excited over a 60-year-old man's Bentley. I mean, I'm
with a W12.
Yeah, I'm not interested.
Okay.
Immediate dismissal.
Where was the Ferrari? Where was the GT4 Lusso and all this?
I'm not sure Ferrari were willing to supply a car for this particular test. I'm not entirely sure of the politics.
Do you like the Lusso, Tony?
Well, it's better than all them cars you just mentioned.
No, it's not.
Really?
I think the Lusso is a bit of a letdown.
No, it's not. It's very
you had the V8 though, didn't you?
I've driven both, mate.
Have you?
I've driven both.
I've not driven either, so I
can't.
Well,
you drove the Bentley.
Yeah, which I think is great.
Yeah.
I thought it would be a good car,
but it's very numb.
No, it's not. Well, yes. Okay, it's numb, but that's. I think you want that out of that type of car.
So why do you want a Lusso then?
Because the Lusso is numb.
No, it's not.
Oh,
it's a Ferrari.
No, but this is the problem. It's a numb Ferrari, which should never exist. That shouldn't be a thing. The steering is too light. It's too easy around town. It's
steering's
too
light on all Ferraris, mate.
No, no, no. It's too light in a car like that. It's void of any character until you're absolutely making the V12 sing or the 8T sing. It's just, it's a weird shape. It's just not a good, car.
Does it still have the weird four-wheel drive system from the FF?
No, they have advanced it. Okay. It is a bit weird. And I say it's not a good car. It is a good car, but it's not a car that I personally like.
But you considered an FF as a replacement, which is very similar, so you contradicted yourself. Good night.
So we need these buttons for the mic drop sound effect. But no, the reason is because I think the FF is a little bit more raw. It's a little bit more edgy than the Lusso. The Lusso, like so many modern cars, and we talked about this in great length last week.
We did.
Has just dialed out some of its character, I think. And of that bunch, I'd still go Continental because in a Bentley, you want to waft. You don't get into it expecting it to be visceral and loud and crazy. You get into a Ferrari and you want show and you want experience. And the Lusso, for me, always just feels a little bit too understated. I get why they created it. I get the people who buy it. It's the Ferrari you can drive all day, every day, no matter what the weather. But that's not the Ferrari I want.
Where did you drive the Bentley?
Where?
Yeah.
We took it up to Lake District with the McLaren GT and the
not
NSX.
On the snow.
No. In the dry and wet. It's a comfortable car. It's surprisingly nimble for its weight and size. And
professional there.
I wanted to
tires.
I wanted to dislike it, but I ended up enjoying it.
And what about the McLaren? Did that the make GT. It to the Lake District? Or?
It got there.
And back?
Yes, it did. I thought it was very good, but I didn't see the point in it. Why wouldn't you buy a 570 GT?
Yeah, yeah.
And do they still make the 570 GT?
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. They don't know.
My favourite thing about the McLaren GT was the press images showing a set of golf clubs sort of packed loosely in the back. And in the event of an accident, you would have a golf club through your brain.
Yeah.
And when you go around a corner fast, where do those...
into your skull.
Yeah, the whole thing. I agree with you. I always thought it was like that was their big selling point. Golf clubs and a McLaren. I'm like, what a disaster. Anyway, back to GPI's race. Yes, the Continental was awesome. A few tweaks, but it was mainly aesthetic. I loved it. I thought the concept was wicked. Put a loud exhaust on it. And ice race in general, as I say... It was a cool concept. Unfortunately, maybe didn't come to realization. A bit chaotic. Unfortunate with the weather. Some great cars taking part, but I probably wouldn't rush back. But the other thing I quickly wanted to touch on before we move on with today's proper podcast was the 9/11. And I ruined Tony's day by talking to him about this before we came on air. I bought my 911 Coyote kind of out of storage to get it ready to give to Tony to put up for sale next week. That was the plan. So the roof box is off, stickers are coming off. Oh, see, now you're... I drove...
Don't be sad. No,
I haven't touched it. Basically, since we got back from Drive the World, literally haven't touched it. It's sat gathering dust, being annoying, and I'm like, oh, it's bumpy, it's in the way, it's wearing the scars of the trip and costing me a lot of money. But then getting in it, I was like, I've missed you. And I suddenly thought, why am I selling it?
Because you want a new car.
Money?
Well, yes, I mean, but... I was selling it because I kind of done, like, that's it. What else can I do with that car? It's been around the world with me.
The YouTube grind, right?
The YouTube grind. But I purposefully did drive the world because I wanted to get away from the YouTube grind. I didn't want to do that format of buy a new car, do the story, put a wrap on it, put an exhaust on it, take it to Monaco. Oh, Benson's broken the studio. Benson's broken the studio. You might be all right, actually.
We can continue without.
I think we can continue, yeah. Sorry, non-YouTube viewers, Benson, who is, as he mentioned, about 6'12", if that's a real height, was moving his incredibly long arms and it just destroyed the studio.
I think this is slightly more comfortable and slightly better for audio as well.
Good, great, good man. Well, you fixed it somehow. But yes, long story short, I've had a bit of a crisis and I'm now thinking, should I not sell the Carrera T and actually not fall into the YouTube trap and just keep it and because I like it. And
is that confirmed or is that
no, I'm like a Love Island meltdown. What do they say? Oh, your head's been turned or whatever. What do they say? Like, you know, I'm a mess, I'm spinning out. I don't know what all the expressions
are. Spinning out.
I don't know. I'm literally mush. I don't know what to do. But having firmly made up in my mind that car was going, having spent a couple of days in it now, I'm kind of thinking I would like to keep it. So I mean,
this will change by Monday morning, ladies and gentlemen.
It will. Sorry, Tony, I apologise. But anyway, that kind of wraps up, I think, at least the first section of today's podcast, updating everyone on where we've been and what we've been doing. We now need to get into our guest. That sounds crude. We now need to get into who our guest
Philip
is.
Scoville.
Yeah. Hey, too soon.
You can't put that in yet.
No, poor
it's
Philip.
Not this morning.
It's not coming out today. It's fine.
When we come back, we will be learning all about Mr. Jonathan Benson, who I am now going to be calling the Shmi 150 of tires.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, Jonathan.
Yes.
How long have we known each other? 4 years? Three, four years?
How did we meet is the question.
I'm assuming, I think we met through Car Throttle.
That would make sense, yeah.
So I think we met through Adnan and Carthos, a good friend of yours.
We've done some bits together.
And then we've done some bits. You've actually been an incredibly useful cameraman on occasion for me. So aside from your role as professional stunt driver tire tester, as we've now, decided, you're also big into your videography, photography, and you've been helpful to me on various occasions.
We did the Mille Miglia. That thing.
Yeah.
And great fun.
You drove fantastically in an Alfa Quadrifoglio chasing an 812 Superfast on some mountain roads.
That's a great video.
You helped me film my epic video with Jamie Chadwick in a go-kart and a Caterham.
Yep.
And my F1 drive.
That's
so
great,
you've been with me for some emotional moments.
And the garage roundup last week.
Where you were effectively a taxi driver.
I was an Uber.
But a great Uber. But look, get into it. Let me ask. I mean, how did you get into tires? Why tires? And how did you end up becoming sort of a professional in tires?
The short answer or the long answer?
Well, it's a podcast, so go longish and we'll cut you off if it gets boring.
We'll just get up and leave. Carry on your own.
So why tires? I've always been a bit of a geek and I've enjoyed comparative testing of everything. My background was a developer. Web developer. So like through and through, love technology, love like cameras, videography, which I think is essential for this sort of YouTube lark anyway. But the actual tires thing, that started with my first ever car, which Tony will appreciate. It was an MGZR.
Oh my God. I mean, I do not appreciate that.
It's a Rover 25 with some good suspension.
But it's like going down the road on your face.
I actually don't even know what that is.
So it was
wrong generation.
Terrible.
The Rover 25 with the body kit.
You're like, saying things. I'm sorry. I was born in 1989. I don't know what you're talking about.
British brand. Anyway, so it was my first car. I enjoyed that car, but I had the fortunate advantage of my dad working for British Aerospace at the time, who owned MG Rover. So you could get company cars for friends and family at a good rate. So for my first ever car, including insurance and car and everything, it was £300 a month, but it included maintenance, which included tires and servicing and everything like that. So the car came with...
What about welding?
The engine did fall out once.
I was more thinking about your feet going through the floor.
No, it was new, so I only had it for 3 years. It was just about not rusting then.
Okay, fine.
But the first set of tyres, the factory set of tyres was Michelin Pilot Sports, the original directional Pilot Sport tyre, which was great. But me being a new driver and thinking I was Ayrton Senna, I burnt through the front set very quickly. So about 4,000 or 5,000 miles, I'd made the front board. But it's not my problem because I take it to a tyre garage and they put another set of tyres on. Great, for free. It was amazing.
But amazing.
And so I thought they put like for like on, and I got the car back out. I saw there were Michelin tyres on there. And within like the first sort of 30 seconds, minute of driving, I was like, this is completely different. Why? And it turned out instead of the Pilot Sport, which was their ultra high performance tyre, they put a set of Pilot Exalto 2s on, which is... that's now being replaced with a Pilot Sport 4. Like, it's complicated, but it's a more comfort-oriented tyre. So same size, same specification, but it was a tyre set up more for comfort. And this for me was like a massive thing. It's like my pointy go-kart-like hot hatch, Tony, all of a sudden felt a little...
not a hot hatch.
It had 100 horsepower.
The only time it was hot was when it was on fire.
It was the K-Series engine, so it boiled itself constantly. So I then went... this was back in sort of 2003, 2004. I then went online to try and find out like, what's the difference? Why is this happening? And there was no good information resource. So me being a web developer that moved into sort of like e-commerce management and running online businesses, I missed developing. So I had this crazy idea that I'd set up a website about tires. I did some online marketing. So like, I knew how to market it back then. It was a lot easier back in 2005. And then I hoped at some point I could either have enough influence, because this was the OG influencer, wasn't it? It was like having a blog. There wasn't Instagram, there wasn't YouTube. It was like having a website that gave information and getting it up in Google. So that was my plan. And the plan was to hopefully grow it into something where either I got support from tire manufacturers so I didn't have to buy tires in the future, which is, no one likes buying tires, right? Because they're a distress purchase.
Super boring.
Expensive.
So annoying.
Boring.
No, well, no, sorry.
You're saying that to the wrong man.
I just dumped on your parade. Yeah. But you know, not boring, but it's an annoying thing to have to buy, especially like nailing a tire is my...
Fuming,
mate. Yeah. But anyway, sorry, go on.
So that was the basis of the Tire Reviews website, and that through me giving up most of my 20s in, like, I've finished my job, so I'm going to go home and just online market it, get into the forums, like help people out, link back to the website, because again, back then it was all about like inbound links on Google. That was where you established yourself, and over time that's evolved and grown into a website that influences about a sixth of the UK tire market. So that's £2 billion market, and it's got a lot of influence on that market. So I'm now in a position that, or I was in a position where I could then transition more to, instead of just being like a written information resource, to start doing my own testing and start like pushing into YouTube, which is a whole new ball game, which has been a steep learning curve, but I'm enjoying it. That's how it all started up, and that's how I ended up completely enthusiastic about tires, and being able to, fortunately, touch wood, do it as a business, and I'm very thankful for that.
So quick shout out for your YouTube channel in case anyone out there wants to check it out, because like, there's genuine brilliant consumer advice out there. It's not just for someone who wants to watch tires in slow motion.
Thank you.
It's just tire reviews. There you go. And then you can find out things like which winter tire to get, benefits between X, Y, and, you know, all of those different elements.
The challenge of the YouTube channel was, I don't want to say to make tires sexy, because that's an impossible task.
They say I need a button.
Barry White playing.
I don't know when else we'll need that button, but for today we should have had it.
But it was to make no one wants to research tires because it's a distress purchase. Like, the people like me don't exist, which is probably a good thing for the general population, but a bad thing for my industry. So the challenge is to try and make tires engaging. So it's either making an automotive story but featuring a tire, or it is straight tire testing. So like last year we had 10 sets of tires on an M2 in Texas and a lovely dry and wet handling circuit, but condensing a full tire test down into a sort of a watchable 12-minute piece of content has been a really big challenge. And it's with moving into all season and winter testing, where we have another element this year, so we have to do like snow and ice testing along with dry and wet and NVH and everything like that. It's going to be a challenge again, but I'm fortunate to be able to try these challenges and to get the support to do so.
Now, Tony, I'll be interested to see what you think here, but maybe I'm naive, maybe I just don't know what I'm doing with my life. I can obviously tell the difference between a winter tire and a summer tire. I can tell the difference between a super sticky Trofeo Arpirelli and your bog standard whatever from Quick Fit. But I'm not sure I would have picked up on the subtle differences that you mentioned of your hot hatch going from what were Pilot Sports to something a bit more comfort. with all the cars that you buy and own, Tony, from a business point of view, but also personally, do you know, like, do you pick up on that? Is that something that you're aware of? Do you look for tires? Do you ever change the tires on the cars that you own?
So I never really knew anything about tires at all, and I'm still not really a professional, but I do know more now since I've had fast cars. And since I've watched F1 as well.
Sure. It does help.
Yeah, it does help. So I would always have a Michelin on my GT3 RS, essentially, because I think that's the best tire for that car. I always think that Michelin for road or for road and track is the best tire across the board. Because my Performante's got P0 coursers on them, and they get hot, and they get hot quicker. I think I'm right. They get hot quicker, and then they go off. Whereas the Cup Sport holds the heat better, and sticks longer. So,
do you find this on the road or track?
That was my question. Like,
you haven't seen Tony drive on the road. Oh. It's very possible that this is road related.
I've seen him drive on track.
Sure.
So on track, definitely, and on road when I'm in Europe going on the mountains, because you're not going fast, but your brake accelerate, you're only doing 50-60 mile an hour, but your tires get 80 odd degrees mm-hmm. in the car. That's what the thing says. I don't know how true that is, but that's sure. what it says. And you can feel the car letting go because the tires are getting too hot, whereas the Cup Sport, so I never really get that on the road.
Okay.
At all.
So we've touched on this before, Benson, when you came up, and you also helped me when I was getting some Pirellis fitted to the 360, and the importance of, or maybe the relevance of, factory OEM sort of spec tyres. The fact that a lot of these manufacturers, Pirelli, Michelin, Goodyear, Continental, etc., will work with manufacturers to develop specific tyres for specific cars. And so that was a big thing on the 360s. I wanted to keep it sort of all OEM. But nowadays, we've got such intelligent tyres, from, you know, courses to Trofeo R's to all these different elements. You know, what are the benefits? Should people be shopping around, or should it be like, well, that's what the manufacturer and the research and development decided, so stick with what you've got?
Maybe. Unfortunately, there's not a simple answer, because there's some manufacturers like Porsche with their N-rated tyres that do go in quite heavily with the OE development, and it is a very bespoke tyre. Mm. So obviously Porsche have unique sizes and a unique weight balance on a 911. Yeah, yeah. So you find those tyres are very built around the car.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that tyre is always going to be the best, because as new technology comes out and as tyres get iterated and as new patterns come out. So I think one of the big examples was the Michelin Pilot Supersport got replaced with the Pilot Sport 4S.
Yep.
But on certain Porsche or BMW fitments, the star marking or the end marking, so the official tyre, was still the previous generation, because to get a tyre homologated from a manufacturer point of view, it's a very long process, especially with someone like Porsche. We're talking multiple years.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a lot of research and development costs. So it's not like Michelin will put out a new tyre and then all of a sudden that's Porsche approved. It might never get Porsche approved. It's such a long journey. So during that interim period, it can become a real grey area, whether do you stick with the Porsche approved tyre, the M-rated tyre, or do you move on to later technology? And I'm sure you find as well, but the people who are best to answer that are the people who are making the change and doing the driving, and that they're the enthusiastic owners. So you'll get on a Porsche forum, or you'll go on like Tyre Reviews website, where the people have done the change and reviewed it, and they're the people that are best. Because I've got a database of tyre patterns and sizes. There's about 50,000 tyre patterns and sizes amongst the bigger brands in the UK. That's ignoring all the tat that comes in from other parts of the world. So I can't test every tyre and car combination.
You'd like to.
I'd like to try, but it's just not possible. So sometimes you have to rely on the owners who have done the change themselves to look at the data and see where people's experiences have sent them. But then you have to think about, well, that person is really valuing dry grip on track, so that's why he's liking this tire. But then if I'm not putting my car on track and I'm mostly on the road and wet grip is a priority, then you have to think about that. So there's, with tires, there's no right answer for what is the best tire for a square thing.
Sure.
You have to look at your car, your driving behavior, how you're using the tire, what you want from the tire, and then you have to do your own research and if you want the very best.
Of course, always the very best.
So if I'm thinking about myself and going on my own experiences, for track and road, the Cup Sport's the best tire because the Trofeo R's more sticky on the track, but it's not as good as a road tire.
Correct, yeah. So the Trofeo R is a very good dry weather track tire.
Correct.
It's very sturdy, but it doesn't have the wet grip that the Pilot Sport Cup
which is like
has.
The Michelin R now. So there's enough. So
you've got, that's the Cup 2R, yeah.
Correct.
So that's like the whole, and there's the Goodyear Super Sport RS, which
Drezzers.
No, the good. It's a new pattern. Goodyear.
Okay, fine.
Goodyear Eagle F1 Super Sport RS is their new Cup 2R rival.
Okay.
So basically, the holy trinity of like track tires for your 911 will be the Cup 2R, the Goodyear Super Sport RS, and the Trofeo R. And I just so happened to be doing that test in.
And what about the Dunlop? There's a Dunlop in there.
So the Drezzers, it's not a good wet weather tire.
No.
So it's not. I personally wouldn't be sticking the Drezzer on a car that I use on the road as
Yeah.
Likewise with the Cup 2R, like you're sacrificing a lot of wet performance for that ultimate dry lap time, and you get that dry lap time, but it's perhaps not the best tire to run day to day, especially in these conditions.
Yeah. So what I found with the P0 Corsa as well on the Lambo, it's actually a good tire in the wet.
Okay.
It's not that bad in the wet compared to the other semi slicks like the Cup Sport or the other tires that Trofeos are an absolute no go. I mean,
terrifying.
They are terrifying.
So we had the Corsas on the Alpha in Mille Miglia.
Yes.
They're good tire.
Yeah.
I feel like you might have gone a bit niche there, guys.
Yes, I have.
It was actually super interesting. I just sat back and let you have a little bit of a nerd off. But we've gone very specific high performance tire for two
seconds.
Let's
go normal then.
So let's go normal. So actually what I want to kind of bring it back to for the general listener is like tire hacks. Because I feel like this is a thing, right? If you're not into the big performance cars and you go on to, I'm just going to say Quick Fit because I genuinely do use them, and you're shopping, and then you see a Goodyear or you see a Pirelli at £120, and then you see a goo blah 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 at £80.
Falcon, or
you know,
you can't use Falcon as a cheap brand anymore. They're premium.
They've gone premium.
Almost.
Well, a brand that none of us have ever heard of. Yeah, is what I'm saying.
Some land sales or some triangles. Something some hilariously
like...
named. I mean, this, sailing on land is the definition of aquaplaning. You do not want to name your tire brand land sale.
Yeah.
And triangle. That's not a shape of tire should ever
no,
be.
No, but I'm like, oh, what a great bargain.
Yeah, they're actually quite good budget tires now, weirdly.
Or a Kumo tire as well, which is quite expensive now. Does that compete with Falcon?
So Kumo used to sit in the same market spaces like Falcon, Vredstein, those kind of people, Toyo. Kumo had some financial difficulties over the last 10 or so years. So
they sponsored everyone.
Maybe, yeah.
wouldn't be the first.
So I think they're probably a generation behind the latest and greatest sort of mid-range brands. But the tire, as with everything in life, thanks to sort of plateau technology, there's convergence amongst the brands. So you couldn't say that one brand has it all anymore. There's like three big premium brands that are making the best tires are probably Goodyear, Michelin and Continental. And they all used to have their strengths and
what good road tires.
What about Pirelli?
No.
So I don't discredit Pirelli. I just don't work with them. I don't come across Pirelli.
So you don't experience them enough. Well, I will fly the flag for my Italian brethren. I'm a big fan. But anyway, let's not get too divulged. But okay, so to go back. So those are your three bigs these days.
I would say they're the three... They're the three brands with the latest generation of tires out there. So obviously any premium manufacturer can make a good tire. There's some caveats within the industry, but those three brands are all making very good tires. They've all had issues in the past that they've been known for, like Michelin perhaps weren't the best in the wet a few generations ago, but they've vastly improved that and now they're class leading.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Continental used to be very, very good in the wet, but they had wear issues. They used to wear out quite quickly, but they've got on top of that as well. Their wear is now up there with Goodyear and Michelin. So these these three brands are all making incredible tires, and it's never been, I'm going to use the word exciting because it is for me, there's never been more exciting time, because you've got three very good brands, and then you've got Falcon and Hankook and people like that.
Hankook's another one. Yeah,
yeah, incredible. And people are now calling Hankook like a premium brand. There's been the big six premium tire manufacturers for as far back as anyone remembers, and now Hankook's the first. Hankook have got Motorsport, they sponsor DTM.
Of course.
They've got Porsche OE on a 911 now, I think. So they've got RS5 OE. Their turnover is going to equal Pirelli this year, so there's no reason they're not a premium brand. It's just like historically that the premium brand have been the big six,
sure,
which technically are five because Goodyear, Dunlop are the same company. So,
but now people have got more choice. That was kind of where I was heading with that. The convergence you kind of mentioned is now, yes, basically a brand that you've never heard of is realistically a very budget brand, as you find in all ways of life. But there are options and there are choices out there, and obvious benefits to paying a little bit more with your tire.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's not always going to be about performance. It's going to be about longevity, durability, quality, etc. Before we have another little short break, I wanted to sort of rattle through like maybe some life hacks or some myth busting on tires.
Ask away.
Because I feel like that's your go-to. The sort of questions that maybe my sister asks me every now and again.
I've got a big bulge on one of my tires. Is it about to explode?
Probably.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Get that checked out without driving on it.
If you bung a hole in a tire, how far and how fast can you go?
It depends how it's bunged.
Ooh.
So you can, phrasing. You can do a very poor job repairing a tire. Obviously, legally, you can only repair a puncture if it's in the center 75% of the tread. On the shoulder, it gets a lot more risky. But if you have a tire fitter that you trust that knows how to do like a hot bung, then it can be absolutely fine for the life of the tire.
Okay.
It's not something I would particularly recommend, and it's obviously there's so many variables like how big the hole is, whether it's ripped any of the cords or anything like that, but they can be fine for the life of the tire if done properly.
But I would not recommend that on a high performance car.
Absolutely not.
On a normal car, you're right, that's probably fine, like just put a bung in it because of the stresses are nowhere near. But like on an M car or a C63 or anything higher, Porsches, Lamborghinis.
Sure, big power stuff. Don't do it, mate.
Just buy new tires.
There's so many variables involved in anything like that. You have to trust the person that's doing it.
For sure.
And that's where the knowledge should come from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What other myths are there? Tread depth. Is that still, can you still use the penny? Is it the penny coin?
20p.
20p coin.
Yeah, the rim on the 20p. Yeah. That's the tread depth indicator. It's 1.6 mil, although a number of manufacturers recommend changing at 3 mil.
Really?
After 3 mil. So conversely, dry grip improves as tread wear goes down because you get less block movement. So the tire becomes stiffer. It won't overheat, so it'll generate less heat. So that's a good thing for tire. Equally, noise comes down because the majority of noise coming from a tire is air being moved, and that's air being moved through the tread pattern. Yeah.
Sure.
So like a slick tire is the quietest tire. But wet grip decreases, especially aquaplaning, because you've got less channels to evacuate water.
Push the water away.
Yeah, so a lot of companies recommend when you get to about 3 mil, there's a sort of like, there's a cliff that the tire will fall off in aquaplaning performance. So it's in the UK, especially when we're blessed with a number of days of rain each year, it's something to think about, once you get below 3 mil. And in certain regions that mandate winter tires by law, there's between 3 and 4, a winter tire stops becoming a winter tire legally because it's snow and ice and aquaplaning performance drop off. So
we're all learning something today, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Another short break, and then I want to learn a bit more about the cars that you've been able to jump in and out, because coming at it from a tire testing point of view, you're probably jumping in some quite exciting things and not thinking about the performance of the car, but the performance of the tire. But I do know that you have driven some cool bits, and that I don't want to blow smoke up your ass. You're quite a handy driver. So come back from our toilet break, we will be diving into the best cars that Benson has driven.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
We were just talking off camera, almost having an argument, and I said, let's save it for the podcast. Because there was a discussion over the GT3 RS. Obviously, Tony is in the room. His favourite car of all time, the car that he will proclaim is the best car of all time.
No, okay.
I mean, you make out like that's the case. I don't know why you're suddenly backpedalling.
No, that's not what I didn't say it's the best car of all time.
You did. You said it's better than a McLaren F1.
No,
you said better than F40.
Yeah.
What does this come
there's
from?
There's literally no car, but no.
250 GTO? No. GT2RS.
But what I was saying is that whilst I agree, it's fantastic, and you said everyone that gets in it loves it. True. But it's not necessarily the most desirable, and I think that Porsche have that issue sometimes where it's a great car, it will beat a lot of things on track, but it's not always the car that people go, that's the one I want. McLaren 720S, Ferrari 488, etc. tend to win, I think, in the battle of 150 grand plus track cars.
What? Say that again. I mean, I cannot believe what you've just said.
No,
go
what
into
do you mean?
A Ferrari or a McLaren showroom and say, "Can I have a 720S or 488?" They say, "How many would you want?" When you, if you go to a Porsche showroom and say, "Can I have a GT3 RS?" They say, "No, they're sold out."
We're not.
Sir.
Let's not
so
rant.
The desirability that is proven. That
no,
Porsche.
I just enjoyed the fact that the 720 is in 150 grand track car bracket. I'm like, yeah. Wow, they've lost some value.
Check the used market. But this is the thing: is that I mean, not talking about going into showrooms on an everyday level.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think people lust after a Porsche GT3 RS as much as it's not a poster car for as many people. I don't think.
No, I guess that
as
no,
other
no.
brands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, yes, it's harder to get
it's
hold
a nerd's
of.
Car.
It's a nerd's car.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to use the term. If you're in the know, you know. But if
yeah,
you're
yeah.
In, it's
that's
one
exactly
of those.
It. That's like, exactly it. Yeah, you're so right.
Like, I did, again, like the Bentley, I didn't want to like Porsches when I first got into it. But as soon as you start driving them, especially the GT products. They're great for what I do.
This is why I don't want to sell the Carrera T.
Yeah.
So yes, we were going to pick your brains, Benson, about some of the greatest cars that you have driven or jumped in and out of. And as I say, you know, I'm sure a lot of the times you're not really thinking about the car because you're focused on the tyre. And then you probably go, oh, actually, this car's not too bad. But go on, what are your big hitters? Throw us some cars that you love.
Volkswagen Golf.
No, that's not what you wrote down there.
No, I will get to this.
Tony's been looking at his notepad.
So my notepad says GT3 RS, GT2 RS.
Yes! And I never prompt him.
Hey.
It's the first thing that come out of his mouth.
He said golf, okay?
No, he didn't.
Let's get back
it's
to golf.
It's the same company.
It's basically the same car. Okay, so wait, golf, which generation?
So for what we do is, so there's the glamorous stuff that I do with the 3RSs, the 2RSs,
sexy
and
sport tires,
the big track stuff. But the day-to-day body, if we're doing an all-season or a winter tire test, we're not doing it on a 3RS. We're doing it on the best car in that segment, which is a Volkswagen Golf. They go, they don't break, they handle really well for their size. Yep. We use the 7.5s mostly. I think is the 8 out now. I think
not yet.
Okay, so I won't be using an
it's
8
coming,
this week.
But yeah.
And they're just perfect for what you do.
And you're talking GTIs and R's, or you're talking like bog standard 2? I don't even know.
So we sometimes use GTIs if we're doing more track oriented stuff, but the standard, was it a 1.4 TSI or the 1 litre TSI? Sure. Like, we use them all. Like,
wow.
At the end of the day, the car is literally a vehicle to enable me to work out what's going on with the tires. And all I need is the car to be predictable and repeatable. I don't want the brakes fading after a couple of laps. I don't want the suspension like changing during the program, because tire testing is, I don't want to get too much into the details of it, but it's not like I'm going to do a braking test. I'm putting the tires on, I'm doing a brake, and then that's the distance. Like, we do 10 and then we take out the outliers because ABS systems make a difference. So we only ever brake from like 100 kph to 8 kph, because that last 8 kilometers an hour that that puts variants in from the ABS system, which
it's quite interesting, like, isn't it? Stuff you never really think about.
For me doing 10 sets of all season tires next week, I will be doing effectively 100 braking runs. So I'll spend a day doing snow braking, and then I'll spend a day doing.
Do you ever vomit?
Braking. It gets really boring.
Well, not just boring, but like pukey.
No, not really. No. You get used to it. You end up with a sore leg. But and then, so when we're doing handling, people will comment on YouTube like, well, if you've only done one lap, how do you know it's good? We don't. We do like four or five laps and then we average the times. And that's what we do for every set of tires. To remove biases, I generally test blind. So I'm not, I'm not literally blind, not blindfolded.
I was going to say, like, you are more talented than I realized.
Ollie Webb, watch out. Yeah. They're set numbers to me.
Sure.
Like, I don't want to know what tire's on because I don't want any pre-bias. The fact that, oh, there's a Michelin going on, I know in my head that's normally a good handling tire. That's what I'm expecting. So like you do it blind. So there's lots of systems in place to make sure that tire testing is repeatable and reliable and fair to all the companies involved. But it's long and expensive. But that's why a Golf, as boring as it sounds, is a car you can rely on to go all day without giving you any issues. And they're okay. They're good handling cars. And
see, I'd wondered if the world had moved on, because obviously when I was growing up, that was the go-to car. Yeah. That was my first car, Mark IV Golf. And I thought, you know, nowadays, even with like Hyundai with i30s and things like that, maybe everyone would quit up. But you're telling me, and Tony, would you agree that the Golf is still,
still
just the best go-to? Yeah, unbelievable. Hatchback. Yeah,
100%. For the fun stuff, Tony will be happy. It is the GT products are very good. The Cayman GT4, the GT3 RS, but and they are more reliable than a lot of their peers. But they're still, like, when they get used properly, they go through engines, they go through components. And when you're looking at a 50,000 kilometer GT3 RS that needs a new engine, it's suddenly you realize just how expensive.
That won't be a generation two though. That'll be a gen one.
Probably, yeah.
It will be, because the generation two is a motorsport engine, which is bulletproof. So,
proud. It's a motorsport engine, mate. Motorsport, I got it from motorsport, my engine. Yeah, it's motorsport.
The gen one
doesn't make you a motorsport driver, mate.
Which Archie's got in his car is just a bored out 3.0. I mean, it's crap.
Before that's gonna go bong.
Before Tony gets too carried away. You mentioned the GT2 RS, and this is where I wanted to go in actually and knock Tony down a few pegs.
No, you won't.
Okay, sure. Because I think previously we had talked that car down a bit. I hadn't driven it. I think at the time you maybe hadn't driven it when we were last doing these podcasts. But getting behind the wheel of that car, for me, the 2RS deserves the additional hype and value, because I think as a road car and a track car, it's better in every way except maybe the sound and therefore the emotional connection, a bit like Pista versus Speciale. But it's quicker, it's I think, dare I say it, weirdly feels easier to drive, but I think maybe I just wasn't pushing hard enough. But go on, both of you, go in. Benson first, why did you say 2RS? And then Tony, do you still prefer the 3RS? But I'm going to let Benson go first.
I said 3RS and 2RS. They're different beasts, and I had the fortune of running a test on the Supersport R and RS at Ascari middle of last year. It was a good year. Very fortunate position, and spent a lot of time in the 3RS in the morning running the program, and then all the journalists went off to lunch and they'd had this 2RS on display that no one could touch. Then they wheeled it out for me. So I had all these journalists watching me trying to run a test program on a 2RS in half a day. Like, it was stressful. And I was having nightmares the week before about this 2RS, because obviously 700 horsepower rear wheel drive, like, I was scared there's a wall at Ascari. If you come out the last corner and get it sideways, you're writing off what was then a £500,000 car.
Right, it's a monster.
However, I found it incredibly easy to drive, and it was so playful and so manageable with all that power. That was my take home from it. I was like, how have Porsche made what on paper should want to kill me constantly? It worked with me, and it was an absolute joy. I did still prefer the 3RS, and I jumped back in at the very end of the day. I jumped back in the 3RS I was hey guys, I'm just going to go this for the test program. It wasn't. It was purely for me.
Sure.
And they let me go out and have a couple of laps, even though the bus was going. And coming out of the pits in the 3RS in second or third gear, put my foot down like I would in the 2RS, and I was like, oh no, I've broken it, because it just didn't go anywhere compared to the.
It's true.
Whoa, no, wait. This is just how slow this car is compared to the 2RS, and it was
in a straight line.
In a straight line, but when you remember you work the normally aspirated engine, that you can just. The 3RS allows you to dance a little bit more because you have that throttle response. You have instant response. You don't have that accelerate and then you've got a bit of power and then the power comes in as the turbo spools in. Like, I just thought the 3RS was more pure. The 2RS is a marvel, like how Porsche have made that thing work as well as it does. Very impressive. But if you were to offer me one of each, I would take the 3RS, I think.
Yeah, and I've driven them both on road and track. And obviously the 2RS is a monster. It's definitely faster. Mm. It doesn't brake any better. It doesn't go around the corner any better. They're both, if anything, the 3RS probably goes around the corner better because it's lighter.
Yeah.
So it's probably a bit better balanced.
And you can use the throttle more.
You use the throttle out of the corner. Yeah. You can just plant the foot on a 3RS and it just pushes you out the corner. 2RS, you've got to wait. Should be in a wall if you don't.
Okay, because you're wiggling too much power. Yeah.
But I agree. It's definitely a faster car by a long, especially down the straight. I mean, like Silverstone straight, you probably get another 15-20 mile an hour down the straight when you would in a 3RS. And that's the frustrating part about a 3RS. It's a little bit slow in a straight line.
When did a 500 horsepower like track car become a little
crazy,
bit slow?
Isn't it?
But when you actually look at race cars, they're never ever big on power. No. It's all brakes and corners. So that's why, and if you consider price and everything into it, that's why I say the 3RS is the best car.
Okay.
For that reason,
you stick with your
and
stick
not
your
just
baby.
Me, by the way, is everyone I speak to that drives the pair of them or that drives, because don't forget I use them for mostly road on track, so mine's very Pacific. If I had
specific,
to, yes, thank you.
Pacific's an ocean.
That's why you went private school and I went public.
Sure,
because you can correct me.
Thank you,
friends. It's amazing. So that I'm very specific in how
specific.
Great HBO documentary.
In how I use my cars. There are much better road cars than the 3RS. Even the AMG GTR is probably a better road car than the
3RS. As we probably discovered.
It's a great car.
But on the track, it's not even close. And I use my car mostly on the track, so that's why I say it's the best car.
Fair enough.
For me.
Yeah, no, and that's all that matters at the end of the day, is the best car for you. I mean,
and everyone I speak to, racing driver, anyone who knows anything, they always say 3RS is the best car. That's it.
Out of interest, have you been out in something like a Caterham R400 or R500?
No, thank you.
Okay, I was curious.
It's that you're pitching to the wrong guy.
Like a
there.
Radical SR3 or anything.
No, you are pitching extreme. To the
but
wrong
I would
guy.
Like to go in a Radical. Mm,
it's another experience.
Because Cops is flat in a Radical.
Yeah.
Here he is, racing driver.
I mean,
driver.
I'd literally be in a wall.
I mean, you'd be upside down.
Yeah,
head dragging along the track. Well, look, it's been a fascinating episode, I think, because I feel like we've actually learned something, and hopefully so have you, the listeners. Has that camera died? Looked like it might have. Anyway, what was I going to say? Beep, happens. Thank you so much, Benson, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Because we have been trying to plan this for about three years.
Season one, yeah.
Season one of Behind the Glass. But it's finally happened, and as I say, I think it's been super informative. Tony, thank you for your inputs, as always.
No.
Great to hear about the Pacific Ocean. And yes, as I say, if you're watching us on YouTube, make sure to subscribe for future episodes, turn on notifications, and don't forget, when we hit 50k, one of you will be joining us for an episode. I don't know if that's something that you're going to be excited about or not. And then of course, if you're listening to us, make sure to keep following, subscribe, etc., so you don't miss all of our future episodes. If you want to follow Jonathan, he is Tyre Reviews on almost every platform.
Jonathan _Benson on Insta, but Tyre Reviews on everything else.
There we go. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch up with you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.